Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
I'm going to be speaking to Gareth Newham. He is the head of Governance, Crime and Justice Division at the Institute of Security Studies. Good afternoon, Gareth. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. And good afternoon to you and all your listeners.
Thank you so much. So, 10 years ago today, we were, this time actually, we were still getting the reports that started coming in about what is the Marikana massacre. And for anybody who is new to the station, who's perhaps joining us from overseas, let me tell you what the Marikana massacre was. It was the killing of 34 miners by the South African Police Service on the 16th of August 2012. And this was happened at a wildcat strike. So a wildcat strike is actually a strike where it's not, you haven't got union leaders. Basically, there was a conflict between the two different unions who wanted jurisdiction, and the end result was essentially these 34 miners who were killed. If we look at mining generally, in South Africa, mining is one of our major, major industries, and we know that miners have a very, very hard life. It's a very hard physical work, the conditions aren't good. Their, you know, sleeping arrangements aren't good. They're isolated from their families. And on top of this, we have the Marikana massacre. So I thought, you know what, this is a good time for us to be weighing in on this. So, Gareth, what has changed for the families and for the Marikana miners in general on this anniversary?
Well, not much has really changed for them. None of the police commanders or the former minister of police who oversaw this massacre and are arguably responsible for what happened, because we must remember that the police initial plan A, was that there had been violence and about 3,000 striking miners had gathered on a kopje outside Marikana every day in the evening, and they would then leave once the sun went down, and it would be a small group of about 40 or 50 that would stay at the very top around a fire. So plan A of the police was to go in at about 2 o'clock in the morning and disarm those, that small group of 50, and then the next day, as the nearby settlement awoke at sunrise, they would surround the settlement and disarm people as they were leaving the settlement, so that people wouldn't be having any dangerous weapons, and that would hopefully reduce the chances of people being killed or injured and the violence generally. So that was plan A. But after political interference from the minister and after decision-making by then National Commissioner Ria Piecha at a National Management Forum meeting on the 15th of August, they decided they weren't going to do that. They were going to deploy 600 police officials, 300 of them from the tactical response teams and other high-risk units with R5 automatic rifles. And they were going to disarm all 3,000 striking miners on that kopje on that day in the afternoon, regardless of what had happened. And then they started to basically encircle miners with barbed wire and throw tear gas canisters out of helicopters at them, forcing them off the kopje into the line of fire by the heavily armed tactical response teams with an open fire, and in two different scenes killed 17 striking miners in the first scene. The rest ran away and the police chased them, and they were largely hiding under bushes and behind rocks, and the police then shot another 17 of those striking miners dead. So that's what happened. None of those police officers have been held accountable for what happened on that date. None of the commanders who issued an instruction, which is arguably unlawful, they have to defend life, not knowingly put people's lives in danger. They ordered mortuary vans and 4,000 rounds of extra ammunition because they knew there would be bloodshed, but they knew it would be the miners, so they just went ahead anyway. This is murder dolus eventualis in South African law. And then, of course, the striking the families who are left behind, not only the people who are killed, but those who are seriously injured, I think are still in the process of trying to get some kind of compensation from the government. And there was a report recently that they were hoping that this would be finalized by the end of August. But for the last decade, those families have neither seen justice for the people who orchestrated this massacre, or the police officers who actually killed people, nor have they received any compensation for the breadwinners that they lost. So their lives have not improved since then.
You know, I was just thinking, compensation without justice is actually just a payoff, isn't it?
Yes, you know, first of all, of course, they're very poor people. They often some of those mine workers.
It's basically shut up money.
Yeah, but you know, still haven't got anything. So they would like an apology. They would like to see the people who orchestrated this mass killing brought to justice, and they would like to at least know that the money that their breadwinners would have brought in, they would still get some of that in order to look after their family. So those are the three things they want in that, pretty much in that order.
Okay, so let's just deal with this, Gareth. Why haven't they received any compensation? What is the government response? I mean, why haven't they received compensation?
I'm not privy to all the detailed negotiations between their lawyers and the state's lawyers, but the police are certainly trying to reduce the amount of money they have to pay out to victims of unlawful police behavior, because that has gone up since between 2012 and 2021 last year. The amount of money that the police have to pay out in civil claims has increased by 446%. So the police have had to pay out almost 3.3 billion rand to victims who could prove that they had suffered damages in court because of unlawful police behavior in courts. And that was hitting over almost reaching 600 million rand a couple of years ago. So I think the lack of willingness to pay out quickly to try and negotiate, bring the amounts down might be behind that, but I can't say that for certain.
So there were two policemen who were killed as well. Have their families received compensation?
Sorry, you just cut out there for a second.
There are two families. I mean, there are two policemen who were also killed in the Marikana massacre. Have their families received compensation?
Yeah, those two police officials were on duty when they were killed, so they were killed on duty.
Yeah.
And if you're a police official that's killed on duty, then you're entitled to a range of different benefits, including the pension payouts, and there's supposed to be an education fund for children. So I assume, I don't know for certain, but I would be very surprised if their families didn't receive the benefits that are due to any serving police official who is on duty and dies as a result of being on duty or while on duty.
Firstly, do you think that the victims will ever see justice? Do you think that anybody will ever be held accountable for this, whether it's the unions, whether it's, you know, the president, whether it's the mines? Do you think anyone will ever be brought to book?
Well, it's highly unlikely because the crime took place 10 years ago. And one of the success factors of successful convictions is being able to gather evidence and have witnesses appear in court as soon as possible after the crime. What happened was that the Independent Police Investigative Director started the investigation after the massacre and collected some evidence. That investigation was then put on hold when the Marikana Commission of Inquiry was established. It's not quite clear why that was done, because the Commission of Inquiry is a very separate process to a criminal investigation and should have no bearing on that at all. But be that as may, they decided to stop that investigation. The Marikana Commission then took 4 years to finalize its hearings and come to the conclusion that this was a fundamental failure of political and police leadership, and that's where the blame must be focused, and gave a range of recommendations about which police officers should be investigated for potential criminal cases against them related to this massacre. The Independent Police Investigative Directorate then apparently didn't make much progress, and from more recent statements that they said before Parliament is that they never got the budget to reconstruct the crime scene, to find out which police officer was standing where, firing which weapons. And so without that kind of level of evidence and information, it's highly unlikely that most of the police officers involved in the killings will be held accountable. But certainly there's nothing that should stop an investigation into, for example, what Ria Piecha did, what the Northwest Provincial Commissioner, Lieutenant General Mbombo did, in terms of their decision-making. Because as I said, if you know that a decision will lead to death, that it's avoidable, in South African law, that's not, and you make that decision, that is not a lawful decision that you can make. So they should at least be held liable for making decisions that led to the massive loss of life and injury that was avoidable, because the highly trained police officials who were advising them told them what to do. They ignored that and decided to go for what seemed to be a politically inspired decision. And that's where the ultimate blame should lie. So that could still be, hopefully, at some point, worked on.
You know what worries me the most out of all of this, Gareth, is that South Africa does not have a good past record of holding anybody accountable. You know, when we look at the TRC Commission, nobody has been prosecuted. And that longer, you know, and these are political crimes. Nobody has been held accountable. And it's very, very disheartening. And we need to change that because, you know, what kind of an example are we setting for our children?
Well, you're completely correct. And arguably the reason why our country is in the state it currently is, both economically, both of growing increasingly high levels of murder and armed robbery and organized crime, high levels of corruption in government, low levels of service delivery. Everybody knows what the challenges are facing the country. At the heart of that is lack of accountability, because the people who we entrust with authority and the power to make decisions in our interests and to use public money to ensure that people get the services they require, whether that's policing, education, health, and so forth, when they don't do that, they don't get held accountable. In fact, we know that often they get promoted. So we know that the former Minister of Defense during the July violence last year was promoted after she failed to stop the violence and make sure that she operated properly. She was promoted to Speaker of Parliament. So not only are people not held accountable, it has absolutely no bearing whatsoever on their ability to move upwards politically or in government.
It's crazy.
So that's where the fundamental crisis is.
Yeah. Hashtag, have you no shame? Yeah, exactly. Gareth Newham, thank you so much. Thank you. Unfortunately, we have to get to news, but I really have enjoyed speaking to you, and thank you so much for making time to speak to me this afternoon.